Blog Talk Radio. Your presence has been detected and recorded. Thank you.
Hi, Janet. Cheryl.
Hey, Cheryl. There, I was trying to. I thought that dog bark was so part of my sound bites. This is the first time I've used the door entry. Okay. Well, good evening and welcome to Madame Perry Salon. And tonight, folks, tonight is one of our feel-good shows, and I bring together some of the greatest minds of our time who, of course, if they're anyone worth knowing, Madame Perry knows them. And that's why I called them the Unusual Suspects, and this is our pajama party. Everyone here and everyone at home listening, I hope, has on a comfy set of sleepwear. And I'm just glad that you're here. We're going to discuss the issues of the day, the burning issues of the day. And I'm going to start with my, is that your dog, Cheryl?
Yeah, it's not my dog. It's my sister's dog.
It's coming down on your feet. So to me, it doesn't matter. I want to know if it's a sound effect that I haven't paid for. That's all. So, I've got this public domain.
It's $5 a bark, Jennifer. You're in for it now.
Oh, yeah, good. Hey, you and MasterCard, good luck, okay?
And your Tonky, and if the Tonky Cat meows, we're all in trouble.
Trouble.
If Becky's there, maybe her cats will meow.
Yeah. Well, let me start with my, all right, well, you two take
care of her. I should have not fed them.
Okay, take care of your miniature livestock, and I will introduce, first of all, this guy has been like my partner in crime. It's just too naive a term to use. This guy has ridden shotgun with me on many adventures, and I hold him in high esteem. I love him dearly. I don't know what I would have done without him in my life. He's a fabulous poet, author, prize winner, he's editor, he can, for God's sake, he will never mix stripes with plaids, unless Kate Bush tells him to, okay?
That's really all that matters, yes, that
but
I'll never mix stripes
and
plaids.
He's known in England as the man in black, the sheer heart attack. They say he's rumored to have three balls in his sack. He is Colin Kelly!
Yay! Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Colin, how you doing?
I'm good.
I'm ready to
gossip and dish and talk current events, which is gossiping and dishing, I guess. So.
Exactamente, mi amigo. That's exactly what it's all about. And you being a worldly fellow, as you are, you just got back from another trip to you were in England earlier, last fall.
I was in Los Angeles, and I'm going back to Europe later this summer.
Okay, so we got to talk all about that and your new stuff. Also on the panel tonight, the amazing Becky Kyle. Becky, welcome to Madame Perry Salon. This is your first time here, isn't it?
It is.
How do you like the decoration?
And I'm in my Uggs, and I have my blankie, and I forgot my teddy bear. Wham.
Well, Becky, let me ask you this. Does it look too much like I Dream of Jeannie's bottle in here? What do you think?
I don't know. You know, I think all the dangly curtains and stuff, you know, I have some cats who would climb those. It's kind of a hazard, but it's gorgeous and it's comfortable.
All right, well, let me just explain. My dog has thunderstorm issues, so they didn't start off dangly, so don't judge. Becky, don't judge.
Me? You know, I've been hammered by the bench too many times.
Okay, whatever. Hammered by the bench or
I'm mixing my judicial metaphors just right and left here.
Okay.
And I'm just hammered, so on the game. Right.
You know, Becky, did you get that growth off your shoulder? I saw that thing in the picture, that little white image. Oh, that's your cat. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a satanic Tonky cat.
All right. Well, Becky lives in Knoxville, Tennessee, studied at the University of Texas in Austin. She is an author. Tell us about your books. Tell the audience about your books, because God knows what I'll say once I get started.
Currently, I have been published in over 20 anthologies. My first novel, Fanny and Dice, is coming out via Wolfsinger Publications about October this year. And it's basically the story of Persephone and Eurydice crawling out of hell into the wild, wild west.
Oh, good. A family story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
It sounds like a fantasy, Becky.
I live in my own little world, and you're welcome to come visit once in a while.
Okay, good. I'll bring snacks, and I think Cheryl will probably bring some sangria. And so, yeah,
bring it on.
That other delightful voice is my this woman is wonderful. She was editor, and she's a writer, and her new book was launched this year, Angry Enough to Kill. And her name is Cheryl
really
Dunn.
In real life.
S.J. Dunn. What's that now?
I wouldn't kill in real life.
No, but you know what? I've got, you know how sometimes, I know you've all seen this, I'll do this for clients. I'll have somebody, I've got some people in a couple of cities in Chicago and L.A. and so forth that will drive around with the title of the person's book on the back window. But yours was.
I know. I thought about getting bumper stickers, and then I changed my mind.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. Okay, I've done that with everyone but you and another guy, which is Joey Stuckey, who has a song. He's a blind musician and producer. He's very well known. He just got back from a tour in England. Very well known in blues music. But he's got a video. It's called Blind Man Driving. So I figured if I put Blind Man Driving in the back of a car, because he's got this video where he's outside of this place. He's downtown Macon, Georgia, and he's on the cell phone, and he's trying to get a ride to the gig, and he goes, I can't. I'm blind. Oh, forget it. And then he carjacks this woman's BMW and drives it. So the song Blind Man Driving. And yes, I figured Blind Man Driving, Angry Enough to Kill. And a friend of mine said, well, my daughter will do that. She'd love to make some extra money. I said, yeah, right. This is my best friend's daughter. She's black. I'm not going to have her drive around with Angry Enough to Kill on the back of her car.
That's right. That's right.
So, I can't do that to this child, not in this climate, not in these worlds. Because, we're here today to talk about, we're talking about news. We're talking about things that matter. And we're going to begin with a story that I read. Read this story in the news. This is what brought this show about. Is everyone there?
Yep.
We're waiting with bated breath.
Oh, really? That's nice to know. So, started off because we're all, even though we're all writers, we're authors, we're creative people, and we create fantasy worlds. But I keep saying when you hear so many strange news stories in today's, and I mean this is the legit straight up news. You can see why we don't need, sadly, the National Enquirer anymore. We don't need the Weekly World News anymore. The regular news of the day is wacky enough. People are just slack. For example, and what prompted this one, if you here on the panel remember, and anyone listening to this show, we welcome your calls. The number is 646-716-9922. And you can call if you want to comment, if you want to speak to one of the people on the panel to whom that you especially are fond of, or if you have a question or a comment, we will not accept warrants or anything like that. Okay, so this story happened about, about 3 weeks ago in Lake Wales, Florida, and it read this way from the Associated Press. Police have arrested an 82-year-old Florida man for slashing a woman's tires because he claimed she was sitting in his favorite bingo seat. Fred Smith was charged with criminal mischief last Monday when police say he took an ice pick to 88-year-old Ethel Britt's van during a weekly bingo game at the Lake Ashton Retirement Community Clubhouse. Police say Smith stormed out of the bingo hall and punctured two of Britt's tires because she was sitting in a chair he usually sits in. Smith was caught on surveillance video in the act. Lake Wales Deputy Sheriff Tony Schultz Smith says Smith admitted to the crime and expressed regret. Smith faces having to pay up to $500 in tire damage and restitution back to Britt. All right, tell me when, because, you know, I'm getting, most of us are getting up toward our golden years, at least those of us who heard the good bands. And is this, did no one alert us that, or through the AARP information, that bingo has gone gangster?
I
knew it years ago.
Vigilante. I think it was the Vigilante Act. I think they've got the motive all wrong. I think he decided she shouldn't be driving at 88 years of age, and that's why he slashed her tower, her tires.
Oh, is that a fact?
I think he's been watching too much Big Bang Theory, and he just decided to Sheldon Cooper her. You're in my spot.
Well, let me say this. As a son who has a mother who is addicted to bingo, the seat that you sit in regularly is like a throne, and if someone is there when you arrive in your seat, there will be hell to pay. Because my mother arrives to bingo 2 hours early. The doors aren't even unlocked yet, so she can get her favorite seat. She sits in the parking lot so she can be the first at the door when they open up so she can get her seat in the hall. The bingo seating arrangement is no joke. People will get shanked in the parking lot. And you will be beaten about the face with troll dolls and bingo markers. So, yes, that's, I totally believe that old man was ice-picking that woman's tires because she got his seat. It's definitely possible.
So, I mean, it's all about your juju. You know, you got to get your mojo working when you're doing this thing, because you know a lot of these people are gambling their rent money and whatever else to play this game.
That's right, my inheritance in my sense.
Oh, yeah.
You mean your former inheritance?
My former inheritance.
Yeah, put mom on an allowance.
Yeah.
So, in other words, do any of you play bingo?
Oh, me?
Do you play bingo? Yeah.
I played bingo once. It was an experience.
I played bingo, I don't know, about 40 or 50 years ago, and then played it about 20 years ago, and it had changed drastically. I went with a friend of mine once, and she played like 10 cards at the same time and had all these magic marker thingies with dots on them. And it was incredible how much she could keep, how many cards she could keep going at the same time, and when she knew what color of magic marker to pick up. There must be a name for those things. They've got
daubers.
Kind of flat.
The daubers.
What are they called?
Daubers.
Daubers. Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I had quite a good time. And here in San Miguel, there's a charity bingo night, which I haven't been to yet, but a lot of my friends go to it.
People are even superstitious about their daubers. If they run out of the ink in those things, they don't want a different color than they're usually using. You know, if they use green daubers, they want their green daubers back.
My mother buys food coloring and water and refills hers constantly because she doesn't want to give up the dauber. So
she has a lucky dauber, too?
Yeah, well,
oh,
look,
man.
They'll tell you, when I went to Bingo, I think Bingo is a tremendous bore. I mean, you talk about if you could get Bingo into pill form, it would put Ambien out of business, if you ask me. But,
yeah.
But
it's more fun than watching paint dry.
Well, you go to these Bingo halls, wherever they're, you know, at the VFW or the church or wherever they're holding them, and these people come in, and they have these things. Now, the women are carrying the Bingo dauber purses, which is this little bag that has all of the slots put all your different colored daubers in, and then you can open up the top, and it's got a place where you can put your tape, because, you know, the Bingo cards are now on these long sheets of paper. So these people buy, fill up a table of the Bingo sheets, and they're all taped together, and they're just standing up, going up and down the thing. I mean, it's like Norma Rae on the production line. They're just trying to get the Bingo daubed before the next number is called. It's like, it's insanity. I mean, my God, you know.
You're not kidding. The one time I played, I was in my 30s, and the people around me were like 50 and 60 years older than that. And I had one card, and I was doing my best to keep up. And there were,
right. You
know, there were people beside me with like 20 and 30 cards standing up, screaming at the top of their lungs and pounding the table. And I'm thinking, you know, I got to get out of here.
I mean, most of these new Bingo halls, they have like, you know, they used to have just the big board that lit up, you know, mm-hmm. They'd call the number, and then they'd put the ball in the doohickey, and it'd light the number up. Well, now they have the monitors all around the room that show you what the next number is going to be after the one they call. So you've got all these, you know, old men and women sitting there just kind of gurning because they've got their number in the monitor. You know, they're going to bingo if they'll just call that number that's in the monitor. And then, you know, the number before is the one that actually bingos, and they're, you know. I cannot tell you how many times my mother has come home and said, my number was in the monitor to win the jackpot. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. So, you know, you learn all of this jargon and lingo, you know, just from, you know.
So, as you guys say, it is this intense to where people have their chairs, to where your mother sits out front like she's getting tickets for The Who or something, or Elvis,
right,
for 2 hours, all right, and people know that there's this protocol, there's this priority, then I think if somebody took someone's chair, I would think that would be a deliberate offense.
Oh, it's a provocation.
Well, at 88 years old, are you sure she realized?
You know, let me put it this way. Years ago, I don't know if how many of you, Colin, you know, of a jazz singer, was a favorite of mine, Anita O'Day.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard of her,
yeah.
Becky? Or, okay, you have?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to know Becky, her manager, and got to know her, and I used to go and work her merchandise table at her shows in New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. And let me tell you, and of course, you know, she'd done a lot of heroin, too, and she'd had some health problems later on. But
this
so, you know, Colin, remember the times when, you know, when we finally read that epiphany, when we realized why our favorite jazz singers from the 40s, 50s, and 60s always had those long, full gloves, you know, and the
right.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but she was, God, how old was Anita then, Colin, when I was traveling with her? Anyway,
not
she was in
900 years old. No.
Yeah. And so anyway,
in her 80s,
there would be times 80s? When her she was about 80. Her her manager, Robbie, would show videos of her and interviews of her throughout the years from, you know, I guess from her Benny Goodman days at the present. And she used to watch those. And I wondered if she was, you know, like watching them. Then she'd get up on stage. She'd start off kind of slow. He had to hold the words or tell the words to her. And then there would be a part where she would all of a sudden just click in and you would see the young Anita, like she was channeling her younger self. And all of a sudden she's got all these jazz musicians on stage in some little club in New York or wherever, and then she starts directing them in trading fours and trading eights and trading, you know, whatever she wants them to do, trade. And you know what that is, right? Like having them, you know, Cheryl, you're a musician.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she starts directing them and going on, and then she's guests. And she could have, you know, she could have six, seven, eight people up there on stage, and she's directing them and going around the head several times, trading fours. Never, ever, ever lose her place. Always on top of the game, always on. And then when the show was over and she came down, about 10 minutes later, it was just sort of like a curtain, you know, it was coming down, like that Anita was gone and the present Anita was back. So I'm saying that to say that I think they probably get in their zone and they know exactly what's going on. It's just balls to the wall, bingo for blood, gangsta, granny, bingo. The Southern writer Celia Rivenbark, and I think this was in her book, Stop Dressing Your Six-Year-Old Like a Skank. She was talking about how she got roped into doing something with one of her kids, with her daughter's class in Spanish class. So, well, can you be our parent to help out with Spanish bingo? She goes, well, I don't speak Spanish. Well, that's okay. Spanish bingo is like regular bingo. Just come on and help. So she goes to help, and she said, and you know what? It was like regular bingo, except without all the cigarette smoke and hair dye, black hair dye.
Oh.
All those colors, you know, shy violet, and what is the blue color that the little old ladies use on their hair, the rue?
Blue rinse. Uh-huh, the blue
yeah,
rinse.
Yeah, rue rinse.
Or as we call it down here, the Rocks Ranch.
Oh, yeah, Rocks Ranch.
Yeah.
Ranch?
Ranch. You ranch it? Did you ranch it?
Ranch
all?
It? You ranch your hair? Okay.
Well, don't laugh. I got my hair cut last week at a new hair salon. It only cost me 55 pesos, by the way, which is about $4.50. And the lady offered me some special rinse for my hair, and it was like that blue purple crap.
You gotta wash your hair a lot to get that out.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it.
I think that's why a lot of
you know you're getting old when the hairdresser offers you blue rinse.
Just go ahead and hand it to you.
Yeah. I didn't like that.
I don't know. Well, Colin knows my hairdresser, and she's also my personal trainer, too. But she, you know Colin, my hairdresser?
Yes.
Yeah. I think this was just a slip. Freudian, I have no idea. But when she gave me a new haircut recently, it was much, much shorter. And I still had my little cape on. And she goes, that's great. I can't wait to see it with your top off, you know, with the top off. So now.
You can't cut my hair short. The back end of it starts pointing upwards, and I swear to God, first thing in the morning, it looks like horns. I think it's a warning label.
I think it's a cat, Becky. It's what it is.
I think it's a warning label. It's definitely a warning label. I don't get up well in the morning.
Well, that's okay. Well, see, with me, it's a matter of, you know, Southern women, that's why we tease our hair to hide those little things, little horns, so nobody knows. But anyway, and Colin knows a lot about Southern women and how some of, not me, but how some of the others can be. But so let's get back. I want you guys to tell me more about this bingo. Can you see, okay, if somebody takes an ice pick, and this can't be an isolated incident, and slashes someone's tires. And I thought it was just over she yelled before him or whatever. Can you see in the future, can you see drive-bys?
Oh, yeah.
well,
I can see a lot of stuff like that.
You know, I guess it's according to what the gun law is in your state. Now that you can carry guns in just about everywhere, you know, I guess, yeah, sure, why not? bring your gun to bingo hall.
If you can carry your gun anywhere.
Who needs a drive-by when you can just bring it right in the front door?
No, you don't have a bingo. Bang!
I can see.
They can gun you down while you're waiting for your egg salad sandwich in the snack bar line.
You sit too long in a seat at Starbucks in Oklahoma City, and somebody will come up, and you know, a couple of friends have already told me, somebody will come up to you and say, are you finished with this seat, and lay the hand on the gun that's at their side, and it's like, well, yeah, I guess I am.
that's in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, open carry.
Yeah. Well,
I think the gun laws in the States are crazy. I mean, there have been times if I had had a gun, I would have used it. Because I think many things happen in life where it just gets to you, and I think it takes a tremendous amount of control not to use a gun sometimes. So here we are in the States allowing people to open carry guns. I think it's dangerous. I really do, and I don't know why Americans don't appreciate that or enough don't appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm curious about that myself, but there's a lot of screaming about the Constitution. So,
The problem is, in America, you've got a lot of rights, but people don't consider that there are responsibilities and consequences that go hand in hand with those.
Well, I mean, there was this guy here in Atlanta who walked in, at Hartsfield-Jackson, which is, the busiest airport in America. He walked
in
the terminal with a semi-automatic rifle, fully loaded, slung over his shoulder. And he's walking up and down, and he couldn't get through security with it, but he's walking up and down the terminal just as a provocation, just to say, look, I can carry my gun in the airport. I'm like, what a dumbass. I'm sorry.
Well, there's a guy in Nashville that walks around the schools in Nashville. And, of course, they put the schools on lockdown, and the students are, it's back to the 60s again, literally. You're ducked and covered in your classroom on lockdown while, Mr. I've Got Second Amendment Rights is outside strolling around,
Yeah, I've got Second Amendment Rights and a small penis. That's what it boils down to.
So. Yeah. My penis is shorter than my bullet length.
Yeah.
See, there's a guy. When I used to take my dogs to the dog park, but there's a guy that always keeps his up on his belt. With his little holster and his gun, and I can tell it's probably about it's like a 9mm Beretta, and I don't know anything about guns, but I look at it and I think he's not very friendly. And some people don't understand when dogs are playing. He looks like Josh Powell. You know Josh Powell?
No.
Okay,
I'm a
true crime fanatic. He's the guy in somewhere out west, I think in Colorado somewhere, killed his wife, took his kids out on a camping trip in, 10-degree weather, I guess, to bury her out in the woods, and then blew himself and the kids up in the house.
Oh, no.
Yikes.
This is why I do so good when I have people like
Father of the Year.
This is why I do good with Art Harris and Candace Dempsey, people who know true crime, but like other people know music. But anyway, you never know what people will do now that they think they can do it. So whereas, you got, what's your mother's name, Colin? I forget. I'm sorry.
Linda.
Linda, I just saw her recently.
Yeah. Linda. Yeah.
Okay. So say, Linda's there and she thinks somebody's going to go for her dauber. Maybe somebody wasn't really going for her dauber. Maybe they were having a stroke. And it made them lead and fall into her dauber. And then next thing you know,
What's that?
That's my machine gun assembly sound effect.
I'm glad you got that queued up and ready to go.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And you You see how I had to bring you back around to use it? Okay, so she does that.
Dang, she shot me down.
She hit the ground. And so she uses that as her stand my ground. When they go, Lenny, what do you mean? She was having a stroke. She wasn't going for your dauber. Hey, I'm standing my ground. Stood my ground. You can't get me. Stand your ground. You know, you're in a wheelchair. I rolled my ground, you know. So
mm-hmm.
Where? Where does it go? Where does it end? Is that you, Cheryl?
I think it's hilarious.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
You're south of the border where we tend to jokingly say that it's crazy and all these banditos and, you know, oh, no, it's gangsta in America.
Yes, it is. You know, and although sometimes, you know, think about it, though, on the other hand, I don't want to live, you know, Colin and I talked years ago, I don't want to live forever and be in some nursing home and that, you know, smell like urine and the people are, you know, taking care of you or paid minimum wage. They don't like you. They don't want to be there. They won't share their dope with you. And
only two Barbara Cartland today.
Yeah. You know, I'd rather go. Let me just go in some kind of a. Let me go in a bingo. You know, in a bingo melee.
In a bingo shootout.
Who's
you want to be notorious? Is what it is.
Yes.
You know why? Why just go? I mean, think about it. That's a great
jazz song waiting to be written. Jennifer is bingo math.
Bingo.
Get on
that. St. Valentine's Day bingo massacre. So,
how about the bingo blitz?
Oh yeah, we can have grill. We can have those spinning rims on a wheelchair wheels.
God, yeah.
Wouldn't that be? Oh my God, that'd be good. Because you think about it, the culture it's an entertaining the gangster culture. Who? Wouldn't you just love just once to see somebody like, I don't know, what country singers do you like or not like? Who do you like, Cheryl?
Well, I'm a big fan of The Voice.
Okay.
So
that's not a person.
Yeah.
All right, Becky, your turn. I'm going down the panel playing with you, Cheryl.
I love it. He's
ugly. I like
Stan.
You like him or don't like him?
Oh, I like Lyle Lovett. I mean, if you ask me if there's somebody I want to see shot, it's probably Toby Keith. But,
okay,
you know.
So in other words, if you turned on the news and you saw that Lyle Lovett's people had taken out Toby Keith in a drive-by in Branson.
Hot damn.
You wouldn't think anything less of Lyle, would you? You'd say, damn.
He's badass.
Gangster Lyle. Yeah. He went that way before he met Julia, but yeah, go ahead. Okay, let's move. Okay, I think we've exhausted the bingo motif as much as we can, and I'm out of. I don't have enough. I don't have
sound
any more
effect.
Weaponry stuff loaded up. No sound effects for weaponry. No,
you need some.
What about
bombs?
So what?
You need some bombs or something. Oh, that's
wait,
nice.
A bomb.
Yeah, you know, a bingo bomb.
Oh, bingo, okay. Like that?
Oh, that sounds nice.
Thank you. I know.
When Jennifer gets turned loose with a soundboard.
Okay, we said we were going to talk about what really mattered. So what
okay.
about Bernie Sanders?
I'm totally Bernie Sanders. You've got my vote.
If somebody gave me
yeah.
a pen and a platform sheet, I would have written just about every word that he wrote.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not American.
It's just can he overcome Hillary's money and you know the Hillary juggernaut? You know, can he get the nomination? Because I mean, you know.
The Republicans are bringing up Benghazi for the 85th time, so, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the thing is that, you know, it's like I said yesterday after Donald Trump announced. Donald Trump is the designated driver of the GOP clown car. Would someone please cut the brakes? Because, I mean, they're up to 12 candidates now, and there's going to be four or five more before this is done. They're going to have to build risers on the stage for a debate. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Oh, well, you know, they're going to put Mitt Romney on top in the dog kennel this time.
Well, I don't think Romney's going to get back in it, not with Jeb. Well, Jeb, he just has one name now. Jeb, exclamation point, like he's Cher or Madonna, because, you know, he thinks if he doesn't put Bush in his logo, we'll forget he is a Bush. I mean, God, I mean, these people are just seriously mentally ill. I mean, that's really what I think, you know.
Yeah,
and not to mention, they brought it back. I just saw it just a little while ago. They brought it back up because, you know, with all the Rachel Dolezal stuff coming up, you know, the white woman who thinks she's black.
Yeah.
That you know, not too long ago, Jeb, put on a voter registration card that he was Hispanic. I mean, you know, what's going on? I mean, I'm not buying that whole transracial thing. I'm sorry, but someone's going to have to sell me a little harder on that. You know, they've been doing that all week now with trying to compare this Rachel Dolezal to Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm like, sorry, not buying, biting.
You're
and,
not buying.
Well, do you think what she did was so terrible?
Not even what color is the dress? What color is the? What color is the dress? What color is the?
Oh.
The Rachel, remember that blue dress? Oh, so the thing with. But then again, yeah. Well, okay, come on, think about it, Colin. Let's explore that. The Caitlyn Jenner and the Rachel, and how do you pronounce her last name?
Dolezal.
And Rachel Dolezal. What's the difference?
Yeah. What's the difference? Okay, I'll tell you what the difference is. Let's start with this. Rachel Dolezal is pretending to be black, and when she's tired of being black, she can go back to being white. And that is the ultimate in white privilege. There's that. Caitlyn Jenner is going to have reassignment surgery, and you're not going back from that. She's always wanted to be a woman, and so now she is. So she has become her preferred gender. And I think there's a huge difference in trying to explain a white woman who is, you know, obviously mentally ill, who has been doing this charade now for 10 years or more. And now you're hearing all of these other things about her, the family life, you know, the brother's a molester, the parents are like some kind of right-wing religious nuts, you know. So obviously lots of issues going on there. But to try to conflate her with Caitlyn Jenner is just makes me want to vomit, frankly. So, you know, yeah, I'm not buying, you know.
Well, but she didn't change. I mean, she was outed in essence, wasn't she?
Her parents outed her. Apparently they're,
yeah.
I'm not sure why suddenly. I think there's some kind of ongoing litigation between this family. It sounds like there is. And, you know, they were just trying to do, you know, I don't know what they were trying. I don't know why. You know, but obviously the whole family is kind of, you know, a mess. You know.
Well, all I'm thinking about is that you say there's a difference because of the fact that she could out herself at some point and choose to be white and have the privilege of white
people. She was white
until
10 years ago. I mean, she was white.
Yeah,
she was going to Howard University and sued them because she thought she was being mistreated because she was white. And suddenly, well, now she's black. I mean, it just, you know, no. I don't think, wanting to, you know, when you are transgender, that is something that's inherently inside of you. It's a genetic thing. A woman who decides one day, I'm going to be black because I've adopted some black kids and my husband's black and I studied African-American studies at Howard University. I'm just going to be black. That is just, you know, hey, why not?
But I can't figure out why anyone would choose to be black. With so much racism in the States, you know, why would someone choose to be black? I don't understand what was in it for her.
Well, I don't either. I mean, I know there's a lot of, you know, people defending her. I mean, there are even other, you know, black people who are defending her, you know, because apparently while she's been, you know, in Spokane doing, you know, that, you know, that she's, you know, that her track record there of, you know, showing injustices and racism and all that, you know, she's done all of that. But while she's been doing it, she's basically been in blackface. It's like a minstrel show. How she could get up there and do it with a straight face for 10 years, I just don't get it. I mean, that's just some extra crazy right there.
Can you imagine how her in-laws felt about that?
Well, you know, I mean, she's disowned
coming
her
up
father.
With your black wife.
Well, she now claims that this black man that she met is her father. That there's no, tonight I think they said on the news that she said there's no DNA proof that white man's actually my father. I mean, that's just nuts. I mean,
yeah, that part is nuts. Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. You know, I mean.
Well, and the sad thing is, we the media, instead of telling us, you know, meaty stories that actually have some meaning or somebody that's done something of some historical or medical or just humanitarian significance, you know, we're going to have days and days of this woman pretending to be something she's not and discussing whether she has the right to fake it.
Right. Well, and she's a giant distraction. Because while she's doing her minstrel show, and she's going to make $1 million off of it, because someone's going to offer her a book contract, or some TV show can pay her $1 million to, you know, do a reality show. Something is going to happen, and she's going to be rich after all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the meanwhile, we've still got, you know, policemen shooting black people in the streets. Or physically assaulting them and throwing them to the ground because they're at a pool party. She's just one big, gigantic distraction. And, you know, that's what it is, you know, which is a real thing.
And there's legitimate black literature that's being written, that's being well written, that's actually exposing the experiences, actually walking in the skin, walking the walk, talking the talk, being born and going through the life, and that won't get published because that $1 million or so is going to go to her.
That is exactly right.
All right, guys, I'm going to play a little song by our friend who was on our show last week, Veronique Chevalier, and she puts the steam in steampunk. And let's all get some more coffee and come right back. And if you're out there listening, 646-716-9922. If you're listening live too, please push the follow button or click on that so that it looks like I've got a lot of followers and I can get a sponsor. Yeah, we do this all the time. All the time. All right.
Yes, bingo cards. You're going to get the Dixie's Daubers as a sponsor.
We're going to get, oh, my God, you a damn genius, Kyle. You really are. We're going to get us, you know, it's long been my dream as an entertainment publicist to get one of these nice, fancy, country, western star type of RVs, the things you can travel with, and we'll just deck it out, and we'll go on the road and get all my favorite clients and people, and we'll just go on the road on tour, and that's what we'll do. We'll get Dauber to, Bingo Dauber to, promote. All right, so for right now, while you guys are having get some coffee or having your you know, weed break or whatever, The Dance Master by Veronique Chevalier.
social hall, with devil may care he regarded them all. His hooded black eyes hint at his onyx heart. Unwary young women were but good for his art. In his velvet arms his victims did fall, ignoring the warnings of sundry and all. They were held in the thrall of his deep brooding ways. Their charms he sold in opium dens and dark alleyways. He taught them to tango with stairs and to fox trot with wolves, Charleston with chairs and to break their spoon bowls. Miss, if he catches you glancing away, that's when he'll teach you to not dance his way. When offspring arrived, he seldom delayed in selling them off to the white slavery trade. Devouring young roses, a tiresome life, but this he preferred to supporting a wife. You glancing away, that's when he'll teach you to not dance his way. Years come and go like strands of stained pearls to strangle the songs of unfortunate girls. Past the porch or the laudanum of some noxious brew, those potions to drown out what he's done to you. The port of the laudanum or some noxious brew, his passport to do what he does to you, his passport to do what he does to you.
Ah, Veronique Chevalier. Veronique Chevalier in The Dance Master. Welcome back to Madame Perry's Salon with the Unusual Suspects Pajama Party. And we have lost, somehow, we've temporarily lost Cheryl Dunn. I guess she took that break a little too seriously. Maybe she'll come back.
She fell asleep in her pajamas.
Oh, she went out there dancing to that violin music.
You know, Cheryl has played keyboard in a salsa band.
Mm-hmm.
She still may do it, I don't know, but she's a pretty fascinating character there. Okay, so where were we? Changing races,
about,
changing
we
sexes, talking about Rachel.
And the candidates for the upcoming presidential election.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get back to the election, because that's got so much. You know, somebody said if Jeb and Trump and you know, it might bring John Stewart back on the air, because he said, you know, he didn't have anybody to make fun of. Wouldn't it? Yeah.
Oh,
some
God.
Specials or something? I miss him very much.
I attended a local rally for sanity in 2012, and yeah, you know, we need it again. We may have rallied, but I don't think that sanity ever caught a good solid breath after that.
Okay. All right. So, Colin. Where do you think Hillary's going to end up on this one?
Well, she's probably going to wind up winning. I mean, you know, I mean, I as much as I would like, I mean, I'm a realist here. I mean, you know, if and I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to support, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, but I'll take Hillary. I mean, I'll take anybody over any of those idiots that are part of the Republican Party. I mean, any day. I mean, Hillary could have, like, you know, you know, Hillary would have to do something especially grievous at this point to get me not to vote for her over the clown car patrol over on the GOP side. I mean,
Colin, please say that again for anybody who didn't hear it at the beginning, or because I just want to hear it again. What was it about the Trump designated? Please say that again. That was just such a... I want to tweet that out.
That Donald Trump is the designated driver of the GOP clown car. Someone please cut the brakes.
okay.
It's got all a wheel in the ditch and a wheel on the track.
You know, I mean, because, I mean, you just look at that, you know, it's a bunch of, you know, they're just, you know, they're all, you know, what the funny thing was is that, you know, Rand Paul, you know, who was a libertarian up until about 6 months ago. He has totally, you know, because what you have to do, you can't be a moderate Republican. You have to play to the whack job, Christian, crazy, conservative base to get the nomination. And so even if you do have an ounce of sanity, you have to pretend like you're a lunatic to get the nomination. So that's what they all do. They pretend like they're a bunch of nuts so they can get, you know, they can get middle America to, you know, who's scared of, you know, the gays and scared of women and, you know, Jesus is coming, blah, 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 you know, to get the nomination. So, I mean, how can you, I mean, you just can't even take any of them seriously. It's just, you know, they're up there spouting the party line, you know, and.
Do you think there's any chance they'll be elected?
Who are one of those
Republicans?
As a
Canadian, I'm terrified of this.
Not out of this field, no. Unless someone amazing steps in at the last moment, it's not going to be any of those guys, no. Or Carly Fiorina, you know. Did she drop out? I mean, you haven't heard a word from her since she announced she was running. But she's as big as nut as any of them. So, you know. So,
keep in mind, she's got 30,000 former HP employees and their families and friends that are campaigning against her actively.
Yeah, of course, because, I mean, I wouldn't want her. She couldn't run a business. Why would you want her to run the country? I mean,
well, same
you
thing
know.
With Donald Trump.
Well, exactly. Sure, he's got $9 billion or whatever the hell he said he had, but, you know.
The reason he's got it is he's accrued bad debt, and then he's just shucked it off for somebody else to pay.
You know
he's no different than a welfare recipient, except a welfare recipient has a little bit of dignity. They're at least trying.
And he certainly can't get up there and pound his chest about being, you know, some family values, you know, moral majority type, because, I mean, he's banged his way through every woman in New York and married half of them, so... I mean, I don't know what he's got other than he can just get up. I mean, because he's a reality TV star with a bad haircut. I mean, you know, he's another distraction. You know,
honestly think, how many of them do you think are actually in it to win it? And how many of them do you think are actually in it for the PAC money?
I think half of them or more are in it for the PAC money. I mean, everyone's like, oh, it's going to come down between Jeb. I've got to keep saying it that way because of the exclamation point in the logo. Jeb. So you've got him and then you've got Rubio. And apparently that's what the talking heads on, you know, the conservative talking heads think is probably going to wind up coming down to those two. Well, good luck. Because... you know, Deb is soft on immigration, and he's for Common Core. Those are two things that Trump is actually correct about. And the base is not going to, is not buying. They're not going to buy that. And then as far as Rubio, you know, he needs the Hispanic vote, and I don't think they trust him. And, you know, I just think there's no momentum behind any of them. And the Republican Party has, you know, while they might have taken over seats, you know, in Congress during the last election, they have proven, just like Congress before, when they were not in the majority, that they still can't get a damn thing done. And,
yeah.
You know, people aren't stupid, you know.
Mm-mm.
So,
well, we would like to hope they're not, but,
well,
you know,
yeah.
Then again, Texas elected Abbott.
Well, true, you know. But they also
What happened to Christie?
Well,
Christie
said he's going to get into it. He's totally unelectable, but he said he's going to get in. So
again,
you know,
PAC money.
Why give up a, you know, he's getting an income as governor. Why give up that? You know, I mean, I guess he'll take some PAC money and run and write a book about it or be a Fox News contributor when he fails. I mean, I don't know.
None of these guys have to resign their jobs to run, though. Keep in mind,
they can
do a half-assed job of being in their elected position and be out on the campaign trail 90% of the time and still draw their full salary and their benefits as an elected official,
right,
and go
right
back to their seat when they lose.
Right.
And they have the PAC money in addition to that.
Damn, that's the racket I should be in. Hey,
if I was a government employee and I chose to run, you know, like say I was a teacher or I was a police officer or whatever, and I chose to run, I would have to resign my position and I would have to basically, you know, live on savings or hope or,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, an inheritance or whatever money I might possibly have to be elected. But these elected officials, on the other hand, do not, because, you know, there's no argument about them shortchanging the populace of their work as a senator or a Congress, a United States representative or a governor or whatever, to run for office. Well, in some cases, their districts may be better off.
Maybe. All right. Well, Rebecca McFarlane Kyle is the...
Yes, ma'am.
It's
you say
obedient.
My middle name and I know I've done something wrong.
Rebecca, I hope you remember us all well in your next book and mention us and give us a spot in there. I have two more callers that have joined our pajama party, and I hope that they'll tell us what kind of pajamas they're wearing. The first one, I believe, is calling from the exotic country of Macon, Georgia. Joey Stuckey, is that you?
It is indeed.
Joey, I like the Hugh Hefner pajamas you're wearing.
Honestly, you know, these pajamas are what earned me the moniker "Sexy as Elvis with Half the Fat." So these are my special striped pajamas. You know, seriously, here's the sad thing. I actually have a pair of Cookie Monster pajamas, and I wear them proudly. It's kind of sad. It's kind of sad, but there you go.
All right, and
cookies.
Joey, we were talking about you earlier in the show.
Oh, dear
and,
God.
But we'll get right back to kind of another one. Okay, and my next caller who is from, it's somebody from our area code, 404. Hi, this is Madam Perry.
Hey, it's Karen.
Karen?
Karen, oh yes.
Is this Karen Head?
It is, and I am not wearing pajamas because I can't get up and put them on because I have a sick cat and he's snuggled up next to me and he's taking priority. So
you're
he's
exactly
reasonable.
Where you should be, Karen. Then exactly where you should be, Karen Head. I'm so honored to have you call in.
I'm just glad I'm sneaking in here at the last.
I am too. And do you know the rest of the panel? I have.
I think so.
You know the the love god of Midtown Atlanta and Fayetteville, Colin Kelly?
We've occasionally, I think, bumped into each other.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, some of your little left-wing pinko literary events. And
that's
we
right.
also...
those would be the ones.
Okay. And we also have Becky, a.k.a. in the literary world, Rebecca McFarland Kyle. Do you know Karen Head?
No.
Becky, I think we've actually met at a literary event or two in passing.
Okay. And,
we may have.
And also we have S.J. Dunn, author, Canadian, who just skipped over the U.S. and moved straight to Mexico.
Well, that was smart. There you go.
I was going to say, there's some wisdom.
S.J.
Yeah.
Dunn, Karen Head, and also...
burritos are great down here.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, God. Breakfast tacos.
Karen Head, Joey Stuckey, S.J. Dunn, Colin Kelly and Becky Kyle all here. You are the unusual suspects of my pajama party, and I'm grateful. We've already covered, guys, for those of you who just came in late, and I'm not going to name any names, but the initials are Karen Head and Joey Stuckey. We've already gone over.
Some of us were working.
Yeah, some of us were working, actually.
Yeah. Show off. So,
a job I would have been, I would have to quit if I ran for public office. So there you go.
Okay. Well, we opened with gangster bingo, as you probably saw in the ads, and the bingo drive-by shootings and stuff like that. And
there's nothing a blind person likes more than indiscriminate fire. I mean, that's just that's the only way I can participate. I can't really aim.
Listen, y'all, I played bingo. I had a bingo group in grad school. We in Lincoln, Nebraska, we would go play bingo at least once every couple, 3 weeks. It was a great way to spend the evening. But they used to hold it at the Southeast Firefighters Hall. And it was always shocking to me that there would be all of these old people in there hooked up to their oxygen machines, and they would be smoking like crazy. And we're in the Firefighters Hall. And
that's
thinking,
awesome.
Really? But it was great. It was great fun. I loved it. I love playing bingo. Bingo gets serious. I mean, that's some serious stuff.
Oh, yeah. Fist fight.
College moms into the bingo.
Jennifer Perry, I mean, she'll slug you if she thinks you're cheating at bingo. I don't know. And why does she always insist when we play to play strip bingo? What's up with that?
Well, strip bingo, I don't know. I know strip poker, but I don't know how you'd play strip bingo.
You don't want to know.
Oh, well, Cheryl, you've got an imagination.
I bet I don't want to know.
It's best that we just keep that quiet.
You know, we were talking about you earlier.
I know,
yeah.
But those
dollars
get awfully messy, you know.
So. What did you say,
Jennifer?
I told
about your song about blind man driving, about how you carjacked a woman's car, and then you covered it up in court by saying, oh, no, I was shooting a video for a song.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't they believe that? Yeah, I mean, we did catch it on film. Kind of like an episode of Cops.
Yeah, from the front of the cruiser.
Yeah. It was fun. I hardly ever feel, proud of myself. I mean, I work hard and I do the best I can do. But I was impressed with me that day because who knew I could be such a great carjacker? The trick was finding the hardest part was finding the door handle. That was the tricky bit. But once I got the door open, it wasn't really that hard.
Were there, I couldn't see in the video, were there any kids in there or anything? Because that would be the
deal
breaker
for me. No. There were no animals or children harmed in any way. It was fine. I mean,
harm them. I might sell them, but I wouldn't harm them.
Well, I mean, I think slave trafficking is a perfectly legitimate business venture. I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't want to do that. But
Mark them up and sell them, Eddie. Mark them up and sell them.
I mean, I think it's like the seventh oldest profession or something like that. It was fun. I mean, I was just talking to, the reason I didn't call in earlier was because I was in a recording session and. Make my living as a producer. So, but I was recording and I was just talking to a client. They were just saying how they'd seen the video and I was just telling them the hardest part was really, if you want to do something in one take, and not have it look, you know, edited together, which I, you know, I want to make it as cool as I possibly can. Then the tricky part was those long shots of me running, and of course I'm just plowing ahead, hoping that I don't crash into something. But I really just decided that I was going to just run and do everything that I could do and try to pretend like I could see where I was going, and just if I fell over, I'd get up and do it again. And shockingly, I didn't get hurt. I couldn't believe it.
When the show is over, I'm going to post the video again for the people that haven't seen it. But there's a part at the end, yeah, where the police chase you all the way to the place where you got the gig, and you get out and you run this long walkway into, what is that, the Macon Theater?
It was the Grand Opera House.
The Grand Opera House.
And that's the part I'm talking about. I was like, man, I'll never make this. I just said, oh, well, I'm going to give it a shot.
Did you have anybody near the door going, almost there, finally?
Yeah, I did. Because that part, actually, they just yelled because that part has the music. There's no audio there from the actual shoot. That's just all music over it.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, I'm gonna jump up. So the camera guy was across the street, and he said, I'm going to yell action when I want you to jump out of the car. And from the moment I jumped out of the car to the moment I ran through the door was a long take. Which is really, it's real long when you can't see where you're going. And I just jumped out of the car as fast as I could and ran as hard as I could. And I told him to tell me, you know, to yell, hey, you're near, so that I could slow down enough to grab the door handle. But the thing is, if I had moved more than a couple of inches to one side or the other, the path that I was going, I would have messed up. So it was really important. It was really important to be able to go in a straight line. But which sounds easy.
So you
want to
head about the door,
You know, honestly, I've always had a real good sense of spatial orientation, and I walk around, you know, through narrow doorways, stuff like that, here in my office all the time. But anytime I have my allergies mess up, when my hearing gets a little less keen from sinuses, you'll see me kind of clip the walls and clip the doors on my shoulder, something like that. But fortunately, that day, even though it was really cold because it was in February. Fortunately that day, I didn't have any problems, and it was, but I, like I said, it came off with a lot fewer broken bones than I expected, I'm just dumb enough to try it anyway. It all came about because
you too could run for the GOP.
You know, at the risk of it, Joey and Karen, did you hear, you know, I'm sorry, I know I'm going to run this, but this is so damn funny. The Collins' description, he said, Donald
Trump.
Yeah,
Trump is the driver of the clown car, yeah. I actually was listening at that point, and I posted on your blog talk site I think is the funniest graphic I've seen today, which is a We Shall Overcome.
Oh, yeah.
It's a picture of Trump with the hair, and I thought, yeah, there we go. That's it. You know,
that is
exactly
caption.
Why he will not be elected.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Hard to take that seriously. Even blind people know that.
It is very hard to take.
Yeah. Even the blind are like, oh, you can't take that seriously. Yeah. I politics is such a crazy thing, but I will confess to trying to bribe my friends into writing my name down for president in the ballot. But apparently very few of them have done that. Because I'm still here, so I don't know. But I've always thought it'd be a fun gig. You know, you could go around the big plane.
Though.
You know, you could drop bombs on people. I mean, Jennifer Perry would do it.
I
would actually vote for Jennifer Perry for president. I think we should start that campaign.
Oh God, no! I don't
Jennifer Perry for president. Well, think of the world we'd live
Joey,
in. I mean, people, you know, be a little crazy.
Joey, sit still for a second.
One second.
There you go.
That was fun. I'm sorry everybody else didn't get in on that. That was good.
Joey, last time I was at your studios in Macon. I mean, I met Jason Carter. So
yeah, that's true.
He's up there to hang out and have lunch and everything.
And you know that Chip Carter was here yesterday.
Oh really?
Yeah, he was down yesterday. He was. I'm not exactly sure what all he was doing, but part of what he was doing was visiting the Big House, which is the Allman Brothers Museum that's here in town, which is the house they used to live in. And he was in town with a good friend of mine that you know, Kodak Harrison. So he was in town.
Oh, yeah.
And Kodak's a good friend, and we just, shameless plug, just released an audiobook of his book, The Turtle and the Moon. So it's,
well,
he was down
to business. About The Turtle and the Moon later.
Okay, good.
So, no,
is it kinky? Well, I mean, is it something we can not talk about on air?
Joey.
All right.
Don't, Joey, don't what? Make me. You know how I am.
Oh, I know. Oh, yes, I know.
Listen.
Now, what is that supposed to be, cocking and locking? What?
No, it's an assembly.
Oh.
So, anyway, you know, I'm into crafts. That's machine gun assembly. Why
yeah,
buy
that's what I thought.
$4 from China when you can spend $90 at
nothing
Michael's
says,
and make it yourself?
Listen, nothing says I am hip like a decoupage Uzi. I mean,
okay.
That's what you want.
I don't have it. I have a Mac 11. But anyway, here's the point. Is that you had Jason Carter. I think Chip's son and I took a political science, not a political science. It was a political publicity PR class together. Something like that. But, yeah, so you're far more connected than I am to the political scene. And, heck, Karen Head's probably a better choice for governor or president than I.
Well, I think you should be able to like the person that you elect, which tends to be more difficult every year I get older. But, yeah, you know, it's my dad actually, I really do have a unique perspective on that because my dad was Southeastern coordinator for Jimmy Carter's campaign back in the 70s. And then he had a similar role of campaign chairman for Governor Bob Graham of Florida for a number of years, who then became a senator. But he's I've grown up around politics all my life, and it's a different. I don't know if it's because I'm older, or if the world's just moved on, but it certainly appears to be a lot different than what it seemed to me, you know, when my dad was involved. It seemed like there was actually some people trying to get something done, and that people could disagree and still be civil. Which I think would be nice.
Yes, I certainly missed that.
You know, agreed.
I was in the UK for their election day back in the beginning of May, and you know, there were so many things about it that struck me, but that was one of them, was the civility. I mean, you know, the other thing is that they're only allowed to campaign for like 45 days before the election, which I think we should totally institute here.
That's
we should definitely have that here.
Yeah, because, I mean, part of it is just, it's so exhausting. And, I mean, you know, I'm a rhetorician by training. I mean, I'm a university professor who specializes in that. And, I mean, so, you know, elections are like crack cocaine for me. I mean, I just, it's, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, did they just do that? Wait a minute, he's standing in front of that? She said that? But by the same token, I mean, it's just, it's like we never stop now. I mean, it's a constant campaign cycle. And
right.
It used to not be that way. I mean, you know, I'm almost 50, and you know, we used to have elections every 4 years and not this constant sort of just, you know, ongoing thing. And it's just, that's the part that I just can't deal with.
And Karen, what do you think about the idea, since you're, I mean, this is kind of your specialty, I mean, would you say that, I mean, I don't know that anyone can stand up to 24-hour scrutiny every day. I mean, I don't know that anybody can be successful and be someone you'd want to totally elect 100% of the time. I mean, I'm assuming that you would agree that the 24-hour news cycle is a big sort of issue with oversaturation.
Oh, it is. But I also think that what it's doing is it's leaving us now only with candidates who essentially have, you know, decided they were candidates in vitro and have shaped themselves, you know, that way. Because, I mean, real people, you're right. I mean, you know, none of us, you know, have led perfect lives. I mean, we all have sort of, you know, things. And I think that a lot of the really sort of best people who could probably lead the country, any country in the world for that matter, but especially this one, in the Western countries, you know, wouldn't run for election because they wouldn't subject themselves and their families and their friends to just the onslaught of that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's really kind of ridiculous. And just how easy it is to propagandize somebody. I mean, you know, that people just, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I often teach and, you know, I'll show people, you know, a photograph and I'll show them part of the photograph and I'll get them to react to that. And then, you know, you expand it out and show them the rest of the frame. And, you know, that can totally change, you know, what their perception is. And
sure.
I remember there was that famous photo that was going around by all the people who were anti-Obama on Facebook a while back, And it reappears from time to time, where he's the only one not with his hand over his heart, and it looks like they're, you know, maybe pledging allegiance or something. It's at an outdoor gathering. And, you know, I often, when I see that thing posted, I just ask a simple question, you know, how would you feel if we zoom that out and it's maybe not the American flag? I mean,
yeah. You
know, mm-hmm. how would that be your perception of what's happening?
See, that's
in the
true.
Picture?
I never even think about stuff like that, because I totally don't get how sight works. I mean, sighted people, I'm always thinking they should be able to see more than they can, or they whatever. They, I don't know, but I would never, that would never even occur to me to zoom out. I don't even think about this stuff. That's a killer
easy.
Point.
It's just so easy. I mean, the and if the people who, you know, still like to talk about, you know, the communists, you know, as being, you know, sort of this, you know, horrible thing, you know, those of us who are old enough to remember the Cold War when, you know, the communists were the awful evil people, the sort of ultimate awful evil people. I mean, you know, they were masters at this. I mean, long before there was Photoshop, you know, I mean, they would cut people out of history, you know, I mean, the Stalin folks, you know, would do this, and it was amazing. I mean, and they did this the old fashioned way with, you know, with knives and scissors and glue and, you know, and now it's just so easy to do any of that kind of stuff. And even if you don't go to that extreme, I mean, it can just be, you know, again, that inundation, the sort of the way that we talk about people, the language that gets used, the, you know, sometimes it's the difference of one word and another word. And you know, the 24-hour news cycle has to feed itself. I mean, it needs to create just enough over and over and over again. And that's why I think we also have so much fake news. I mean, the stuff that pretends to be news but isn't.
Well, there doesn't seem to be anybody reporting news anymore. It tends to be all pundits where everybody's expressing an opinion. And that's fine as long as it's not in the guise of actual just, you know, non-biased reporting, which, you, I mean, I suppose, you know, that's a lofty goal. But you don't seem to have that anymore. I was totally depressed when Bob Schieffer resigned because I was like, wow, that was some of the last reporting that I've seen.
To be really honest, I don't get most of my news from American news sources anymore.
Me either. I mean, you've got, you know, there's just, the thing is that if you read other newspapers from other countries, you will get a totally different perspective on what's happening in America. And, you know, there's more, that's why I read The Guardian every day. I read Le Monde from France, you know, the other from Australia, the Sydney Morning Herald. You get a completely different perspective on America and what people actually think about what's going on here, and you'll see that they all think we're a bunch of morons for the most part.
I keep my homepage on BBC News all the time, and you know,
the whole
BBC World News.
The whole American exceptionalism. I'm like, I would love to flush that buzzword down the toilet more than just about any other, because I just think American exceptionalism is just the biggest load of caca that's ever been trotted out, in, you know, in the last 50 years at least. You know, I mean, it's just stupid, and you know, it just promotes xenophobia, and it's just stupid. You know.
Thank you.
But I don't know. I mean, we're at a very interesting time here, and I just think, you know, I try to imagine my friends in the UK turning on their TV and watching Donald Trump standing up there running his mouth about nothing for 10 minutes with his bad hair, and knowing that he doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting elected. You know, it's just more publicity for the next cycle of Celebrity Apprentice. I mean,
yes. That's
all it is.
He's just
like Rachel Dolezal and the other GOP clown car participants. He's just another distraction from conversations we should be having, you know. So.
Yeah, beautifully said.
Yeah.
See, it was even fun. It was even fun about 15 years ago when I think this was the first time maybe I'd ever seen Jimmy Kimmel. I was working at I was training some pharmaceutical reps on software to help them bribe the doctors. Simpler and easier.
So you're the person responsible for no more free pens?
I'm not responsible for a damn thing. These people were giving away stuff, like giving them, not free pens. Honey, they've given them lunches. Well, never mind, I can't talk about that now. That's going to be my next, that's going to be one of my future essays on Memoirs of a Misanthrope. However, So I've been in all day long in this training course and teaching people. And I go to bed that night, and I didn't go out because I was studying communication law, and I had to read. And I turn on the TV. Well, that's when Siegfried and Roy, you know, when Roy was mauled by the tiger. So that's
all
on the line.
The tiger.
Well,
not
the
both
line.
Of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, okay, whatever. The animal, damn it, okay? So he's mauled, and that's on the news all the time about, you know, oh, the animal didn't mean to hurt him. Okay, then there's Arnold Schwarzenegger, just been like, so he's all over the news. And Jimmy says, can you imagine being somebody watching the news tonight? Because, you know, if you think back then, I mean, that was constant. People were always talking about, you know, how is Roy doing? Is he okay? And Siegfried's talking, and then Arnold everywhere, Arnold. And Jimmy says, can you imagine somebody who's in a hospital with a TV in front of him, just woke up from a 10-year coma, and they hear all these, you know, German accents or Slavic accents, and they go, my God. Was there another war?
That's true. I mean, it is a bit, it is a bit shocking to see some of the things that make it into, that actually make it to the news cycle. I mean, you know, and I would love to see more positivity in the news. I'm not saying that you shouldn't tell the truth, but it'd be nice to see some stories that
a good story. Well, you know, Joey, that's one thing we started off with the show was about this. What sparked this particular episode was the gangster bingo. You know, the 82 year old man. I think you saw this too, Karen, that had ice picked another woman's tires because she took his bingo seat.
Yeah.
And so we were saying, okay, we're going to bingo.
I'm a perfectly reasonable reaction. I don't understand what your problem is.
Well, see, I didn't either until Colin was explaining it. And I said, you know, this is why, because his mother is a bingo.
A gambling addict is the words you're looking for.
Well, yes,
that's
Colin.
Awesome.
I think that's
the solution to the question.
She will happily admit to that herself.
No, wait a minute. Joey. See, that's the thing is, I've known Colin so long, I don't have to be in the same room or even look at him before he knows what I'm trying to think. How can I say this without calling his mother a gambling addict? You know, he's going, go ahead and say it.
See, that was the problem. You put a gambling, you know, people that are gambling addicts because they're playing bingo, and how exciting really is bingo. And then, you know, they also apparently have terrible road rage or whatever.
Joey.
I mean, you know, but who doesn't carry an ice pick around with them?
But this is where I said we don't have the National Enquirer anymore because the real news, you know, sadly supersedes what you would have seen before on the Weekly World News or the National Enquirer. People go, oh, well, they just make that stuff up. You know,
harder to write fiction, too.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's some of what we normally thought of as the tabloids who are suddenly the people who are actually breaking real news, right? I mean,
right.
You know, didn't the National Enquirer win a Pulitzer Prize for the John Edwards coverage?
That's true.
You know, I mean, so it's we're left to that. And actually, I was just seeing online that Brian Williams is, you know, not going to be returning to the air as NBC's anchorman because of, you know, the whole lying about the story, you know, taking fire and being in action and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it's like the news isn't the news, but then the tabloids are the news, and then, you know, everybody.
Well, then Brian Williams, I mean, Brian Williams should go work for Fox because, I mean, Bill O'Reilly's still on the air, and he's been in every media conflict and every war for the last 30 years, according to him. I mean, he's still got a job. I mean, you know, I mean. It's
well,
just,
this,
you know.
This is a good, I mean, this now that I've called into the show, And you've reminded me of some of these sad things. I am going to take up drinking. I've resisted for years. I've resisted for years because blind and drunk are a really poor idea. But maybe it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Okay. You've just touched on a real sore spot with me. I'm married to an Englishman, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, cricket is about the stupidest game ever. And I realize I'm pissing off a huge population of the world.
Oh boy!
But you know, it's like when the alcohol runs out, so does the fun. I mean, a sporting match should not last for weeks at a time, and break for dinner, and break for tea. And I mean, it's just I'm sorry. I've been to see, like, you know, real cricket in England, and it is. so ungodly boring.
I have never understood the rules, but I thought maybe I was just dumb.
And, yeah, no, and the lingo around it is it's very weird. But
now, do you find baseball entertaining? Do you like baseball?
Love baseball.
Okay. Because my wife is a huge baseball fanatic, and I had never really, my parents are fantastic people and taught me a lot, but when I was a kid, nobody thought to sit me down and say, okay, here's what's happening with baseball. I guess they thought, okay, it's a sport, he's blind, this is really kind of a sighted thing, you know, what's the point?
next.
Yeah, really, and I totally can appreciate that, but my wife was a huge baseball, you know, fanatic, so doing what a good husband does, you take interest in what your spouse is interested in. As much as one can. And so, but I've become just a huge baseball fan, and it's something that I'm really able to follow as a blind person. And I kept thinking to myself, trying to follow cricket, I kept thinking, yeah, surely if I enjoy baseball and I love England, I think everything English is pretty much great, I'll love this game. And I'm like, man, I don't get it. I feel like cricket and curling are just outside my universe. I just cannot understand. So I'm glad to hear somebody else doesn't get it either.
Colin, you're the consummate Anglophile. I mean, you know, do you have a feeling on cricket?
No, not particularly. The, you know, if they wore sexier, tighter shorts, then I'd check.
Well, there is
I think
that.
You should write the Queen.
Be honest, okay? I mean, you know.
No, and of course, I mean, the other thing that I think, you know.
They're wearing way too many clothes in cricket. That's.
Well,
you know.
And they're fighting over the silliest trophy in the world. I mean, you know, like the Ashes trophy, which is the one that the Australians and the English fight over every, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
That's what they're saying. It's like 3 inches high. It's like the most ridiculous thing ever, this thing that, you know, means so much. I mean,
really, who knows if those are the real Ashes? I mean, who can honestly
exactly.
say that they haven't misplaced Grandma's Ashes once or twice? So, I mean, you know, we don't even know if they're real.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah, I think if they want to make it exciting, they need to put the Ashes inside of one of those wickets, and whoever you know,
there
whoever
you go.
Gets that wicket, that, now that's going to make it exciting.
Or better yet, how about landmines on the field?
Well, I think that would be helpful in any sports, actually.
Or even better, random blind guys run onto the pitch and distract the game. That's what I want.
Naked, random blind guys.
I'm not a really big fan of sport. I mean, I do watch soccer and I do watch tennis, and you know, baseball is vaguely entertaining. I prefer baseball movies, like you know, Bull Durham.
Sure.
And
you know, greatest sports movie ever.
Yeah, I prefer to watch a baseball movie than an actual baseball game. Is that terrible? It probably is. But, you know.
Well,
that
would be tennis.
Field of Dreams, that's one of my all-time favorite movies.
That's a
but,
great movie.
All right. Well, listen up, Swingers.
Baseball,
we only got,
you know.
Yeah, we only got 2 minutes left. I want each one of you to say, give a shout-out to the people listening and say something that you know, give your tag, give your promo, give your shameless plug. I said that I would mention my friend Marilyn Opitz in Frederick, Maryland. She's the owner of Biba Girl. It's beauty and cosmetics and all kinds of swinging stuff. And also, my gal Bunny Goodjohn is launching her first book of poetry, Bone Song, and she has an event tomorrow night at the Lynchburg, Virginia YWCA at 7 o'clock. Okay, so we'll start with Karen Head. Karen, give a shout-out.
Oh, gosh, I got nothing.
Okay. All right. Joey Stuckey, go. We'll come back to you later. Joey goes.
I love Jennifer Perry. Thinks she's awesome, and it's not because she has compromising photos. JoeyStuckey.com.
Okay. And Jennifer Perry loathes the word awesome because it's too overused. So I was just.
You love it.
Say,
hey, your refusal to like awesome is awesome.
It's God. I'm going to smack. Okay.
See, that's what I've been shooting for.
You know what's going to happen. Oh, damn. My whip didn't go off. Okay,
oh.
And Cheryl S.J. Dunn.
Okay, I'm a writer. I've published a book, Angry Enough to Kill. It's won a couple of awards, and I'm writing the next one, and I'm really excited about it.
All right, Becky Kyle, Rebecca McFarlane Kyle, Becky Kyle,
editor of. Tales of the Frontlines, an anthology to benefit veteran service dog organization, editing two anthologies right now, and my book, Fanny and Dice, will be out in October 2015.
Fantastic.
From Wolfsinger
right,
Publications.
Very quickly, this is Karen. I should probably say that my book with Bob Wood, J.C. Riley, and Blake Leland, is published by Poetry Atlanta, is up for the Georgia Book of the Year in the poetry category. So send some positive vibes out in the universe for us on that one.
Awesome.
We will. And I'm glad that you rallied on the shout out there, Karen. I really am, because you deserve to, and we hope you win. Colin Kelly, hit it, baby.
I just finished the third and final novel in the Venus trilogy called Leaving Paris, which will be out from Sibling Rivalry Press in early 2016. The other two in the trilogy, Conquering Venus and Remaining Light, are available now. And
are amazing.
Thank you. And my book of poetry, Render, is also out now. And if you go to colinkelly.com, that's colinkelly.com, you can find out about all of that stuff.
And thanks to everyone who's listened, either live or downloaded on iTunes for free. Thank you, Colin Kelly, Becky Kyle, S.J. Dunn, Joey Stuckey, Karen Head. Thank you all so very much for giving me this time tonight. Look home to the Unusual Suspect Pajama Party, and we will put it on. I am grateful and honored to have all of you here.
Thank you.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Thanks,
good
Jennifer.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, when you were a napkin, swinging everything you did, you jump and jive and pop and sing, saying everybody's got to swing. But Mom and Pop were right on time. They helped up all your nursery rhymes. So when you started off your dream of a jive that jitterbug scene, Mother Goose.